Premier League show on URN Sport.
Hi, this is Jeff Selling from Sky Sports, and you're listening to URN Sport.
Yes, indeed you are. Hello. Welcome to URN Sport Saturday show, where we're discussing everything to do with the Premier League and English football as a whole. I'm your host for this week, Alex Zonneveld, and this week I'm joined by Ollie Roberts, Paddy Summerton and James Aldred. And there's no football, essentially. So there's international break is on. We're not going to be covering any games like we normally do. Instead, we're going to be talking a little bit about the international results as of late, including England drawing 0-0 with Germany yesterday and Wales getting slightly whooped by France. We're going to talk a bit about Patrice Evra and his ban for his infamous karate kick of late, and Premier League roundup so far for this season, and of course David Moyes, that controversial decision will be coming up later. But first, England drew 0-0 with Germany yesterday. It was a very young squad, very controversial squad. You had some really interesting performances. I mean, Ruben Loftus-Cheek, man of the match on his debut. What do you guys think about that?
It was a very good performance from Loftus-Cheek. It's an interesting one because he showed a lot of sort of maturity in his performance, but he's not really been playing that much previous football. But to come in and play very well on your first day, first game for England, is sort of a very good thing for him.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, listen, it's always going to be a daunting thing. Ollie, in terms of the performance, I mean, 0-0 at home?
I mean, yeah, it was a relatively boring game, as I think everyone would have expected. I mean, I don't think anyone really enjoys friendlies nowadays. I think most people would just prefer to it just for it to just be Premier League. But in terms of the match, I was having a conversation with Saunders before the show, and he was going on about how dire and boring he thought it was yesterday. But for me, seeing the performance of someone like Loftus-Cheek was a breath of fresh air. I mean, we're so used to seeing the likes of Jordan Henderson game in, game out, pass the ball sideways, not do anything. But watching Loftus-Cheek control the game in midfield, I mean, I think there was a point about 20 minutes into the game where he nutmegged two or three people in a row, and it was brilliant to see. And I really do hope that he continues to get game time, and that his performance yesterday warrants him potentially getting a starting place in future.
James, I don't know if you'll agree, but I think that for the most part the consensus was Germany really piled on the pressure in the first half. But I mean, Ter Stegen, he didn't really get an easy run in the second half. There were a few decent half chances. Do you reckon the result was sort of warranted, 0-0?
I think so. I think both teams probably overall with a point was the fair result. Germany were on top in the first half, and I'm an Everton fan, so I know how capable a keeper Jordan Pickford is. He's been terrific for us this season, and I think he's proven that he's definitely going to be a contender for the number one shirt going to the World Cup in Russia next year. Either him or Jack Butland would be my pick for the goalkeeping position. But going back to what Ollie was talking about, the introduction of youngsters into the team, for so long we've relied upon the same group of players, squads have been very predictable. I think Gareth Southgate deserves some credit for choosing this amount of youngsters. It's time that we introduce some new players into the squad, give them an opportunity. They're hungry, they're fresh, they're eager to play for the country, and I think that, you know, that's a positive thing that we could take into Russia. And, you know, young players, they're fearless, they're brave, and, you know, they could produce a good tournament for England.
I think we'll move on to France-Wales now. Difficult night for the Welsh. 2-0 loss. France were just dominant, completely and utterly dominant from what I've seen. Mbappe in fine form, as per usual. Blistering start to the game, and really, in my eyes, it could have been 3 or 4. Is this the sort of end of the Welsh reputation? I mean, obviously it's one game, but we did sort of have this expectation of Wales, like, they are really getting better, they're really improving here. And it just seems to me, though, like, it showed the golfing quality to an extent when they do come up against a very capable side. I mean, Ollie, is this French quality or is this Welsh lack of quality?
Oh, I was just about to say, Alex, I think a lot of it has to be put down to the quality of France at the minute. I think they're by far and away one of the best teams in the world at the minute. They're probably my bet to win the World Cup next year. As it stands, you look at the strength they've got in depth, you look at some of the players that don't even get in the squad anymore. I mean, they don't even have to pick the likes of Benzema, there's others. I don't think Payet gets in the squad anymore. Yesterday I think they rested the likes of Pogba and Kante. They didn't even need them. They've got strength in every single position. They've got the youngsters coming through in the likes of Mbappe and is it Lamar, both of which seem like they're two of the world's hottest prospects already. So yeah, I think a lot of it has to be put down to how good France were. That being said, although Wales put up a valiant effort, they do look fairly useless without Bale. I mean, you look at their starting lineup, and to be completely honest with them, other than Aaron Ramsey, none of them stand out as being like names on that team sheet, and they really aren't inspiring. I think the reason they performed so well at the Euros is because they were galvanised under Chris Coleman, and they had something to play for. The whole country got behind them. But the fact that they haven't even qualified for the World Cup next year, yesterday was pretty much just a fairly meaningless friendly, wasn't it, without their best player. So to be honest, I don't think they were ever going to put up a fight. I don't think the score could have been a lot more, couldn't it? And yeah, relatively standard game, to be completely honest. Standard boring friendly.
Now let's move on to some more controversial news. Where we saw Patrice Evra imitate the film Karate Kid in a feat of athleticism, kicking a fan in the face. He's been banned for 9 months, and he's parted ways with Marseille through quote-unquote mutual consent, which I actually agree with. I can imagine they'd both be in a bit of a hurry to get him out. 9 months, bit of an excessive ban, no? Yes?
Really? I don't think it's enough, to be completely honest.
No, it's not. I mean, listen, what are your thoughts on the situation, Ollie?
To be completely honest, when I first saw it, it made me laugh. Especially because I just can't understand for the life of me why he's gone in for this karate kick. Like, maybe a bit of fisticuffs or whatnot, but a karate kick. I don't know if he's been taking up karate and he wants to show off his moves, but he's been waiting years for this. But yeah, it made me burst out laughing. Completely stupid.
No. I mean, well, message to Patrice, though, the British Martial Arts Association is always recruiting and always looking for new people, so he may well be in for a bit of a career there. But, I mean, what are your thoughts, James? What do you think of the situation?
Well, the thing that I find the most shocking is he's 36 years old. Sure, no. If he was, like, a young, immature kind of footballer, then maybe you could... Well, you can't make a case for that kind of behaviour, but maybe there's some kind of an excuse there. But 36 years old, this is a guy who's played at the real top of football with Manchester United, with Juventus, also been at the height of international football with France too. So there's no excuse for this kind of behaviour.
So, big shocks and surprises this year from a lot of different angles. I mean, obvious one on the positive end, you've got to look at Burnley, Bournemouth.
Yep.
They've been really good, and they've really, I mean, my expectations have been blown.
Oh yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. I've been really, really impressed with Burnley this season. I've covered a couple of their games on the Saturday show in recent weeks, and I've been really impressed with the way Sean Dyche has set up the team. They've got that defensive solidity. I can't remember, I think they've only conceded 9 goals all season, and whilst they've only scored 10, they've managed to grind out results week in, week out. I think Chris Wood has been one of the signings of the summer. Mm. He just suits their style of play, and he's been the perfect replacement for what's his name again? The guy who's gone to Watford, Andre Gray. That's it. So thanks for that. But yeah, I've been really, really impressed with the way they've played this season, and I really wouldn't be surprised if they kept up this form. I think top 7 is a bit ambitious at the minute, but the way they're playing, if they manage to keep Sean Dyche as well, I wouldn't be surprised if they maintained a top 10 finish.
I was going to say, the biggest criticism of Burnley last year was their away form. It was terrible. I think they only picked up... Was it the one... I think it was the one victory on the road last season.
They've got more points this season away from home already, haven't they?
Yeah. They've been fantastic. They got a result at Anfield. They got a result at Wembley against Tottenham. They beat us away from home, and also obviously beat Chelsea away on the opening game of the season. They're just... That's such an organised team. When they played us at Goodison, the thing I quite like about Dyche's approach is they can play a bit of football as well, Burnley. It's not always direct hoofing it up to Chris Wood. They like to bring the ball down. Hendrick and Defoe in midfield are actually two really, really tidy, neat centre midfielders, but on top of that they've got a really strong, solid defence. Nick Pope in goal, who's coming for Tom Heaton. I think he's been one of the surprises of the season.
Yeah, he played brilliantly last week.
Terrific form for them. It's just a case of whether they can sustain it going into what is probably the most hectic and congested time of the season, which is the Christmas period. But at the minute, they've had a fantastic start, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think they play smart football. That's the way I'd really term it. I mean, going back to their last game where they got a 1-0 win over Southampton following a late goal from substitute Sam Vokes. Southampton in the game, 63% possession, 13 shots, albeit only 3 on target. And Southampton had 9 corners. Burnley had 1 corner, 5 shots, 1 shot on target, and about 37% possession, and they won. It's that sort of being very clever, picking your fights. Mm. I mean, Southampton away, it's difficult. I mean, whenever you've got a team who are slightly backed into the corner, you can never really guarantee a win. But Burnley, again, they play very, very intelligent football. And Paddy, do you think this can continue, or our team's going to start to clock exactly what it is they're doing?
I think they're going to continue, to be fair. I don't think they're going to finish seventh, but I think upper mid-table finish is definitely on the cards. They're a smart team. If you go to play against them, they will change their shape for you. Dyke's he's good at reading the tactics of a game and changing it to fit the opposition that he's playing. I think their biggest concern will be the sort of rumours of Dyke to Everton to take that managerial post, because if they lose Sean Dyke, then that'll be a massive loss for them.
Moving on though, Brighton and Huddersfield, I think, are the other two I'd like to touch upon. Really, really impressive show for them so far. Did anyone really see this coming here?
I think I didn't expect it from Brighton, because the way Huddersfield ended last season with the victory in the playoff final and what have you, and the kind of manager that David Wagner is, and the summer that they had, the players that they brought in, they got Aaron Moy on a permanent transfer. You know, he was fantastic for them in the Championship last year. I kind of expected them to have a decent start to the season, but Brighton, I think, have gone really under the radar. I really like Chris Hughton as a manager. I think everywhere that he's gone, bar the end of his reign at Norwich, he's actually been done a really, really good job. He was good with Newcastle, he was very good at Birmingham City and unlucky not to take them up, and he's done a brilliant job at Brighton. They're really resolute, they're strong, but they've also got a number of really exciting attacking players as well. Anthony Kanoka is, you know, a really tricky winger on his day. But yeah, they've had a really impressive start. Huddersfield as well. I was covering the game against Manchester United a few weeks ago, and they were very impressive. Similar to Burnley, they pick and choose the moments when to play and when to sit back, when to be solid. And you know, that's a really good characteristic to have going for the remainder of the season.
I think that just goes to show how much the quality of the manager matters. I mean, going back to James's point, I really, really do rate Chris Hughton as a manager. I think he did a fantastic job at Newcastle and was very hard done by, and he's proven with Brighton what a good manager he is. Same with the likes of Sean Dyche and David Wagner. And one point that I'd just like to make is that with these sorts of managers, I'd really like to see managers who are doing well with these sorts of clubs be given a chance with the bigger teams, because it really does annoy me how a lot of these managers who have failed at the bigger clubs then continue to get chances at the other ones. I mean, I'm sure we're going to touch on David Moyes in the future, but I would have much preferred someone like Chris Hughton, and would have much preferred someone like Sean Dyche to come in, or someone like an Eddie Howe, who's done such a good job with Bournemouth, to come in and maybe manage a slightly bigger club and work their way up to the top.
Carrying on with our conversation, we're going to look at the more negative elements now of the Premier League. I mean, Ollie, I'm just going to let you out the gates to a great start here. What the hell are West Ham doing this season? What are they playing at? With the Bilic, I mean, it wasn't brilliant managerial skills, but I mean, you'll look back with fond memories, I feel like, in a few games' time under Moyes. What's going on?
Where do I start, Alex? I mean, first off, I should probably say that although I'm happy that Bilic left, I've been calling for him to get the sack on this show for the last few weeks now. I was about to say I'd like to thank him, not that he's ever going to listen to this. I'll always admire him, especially for that first season he had with us, which is probably the best season that I've seen from West Ham in my lifetime. But it was definitely the right time for him to go. He definitely wasn't going to take the club forward anymore. But now let's talk about his replacement, which shocked me to say the least. I mean, we were talking earlier about some of the managers in the Premier League managing these lesser clubs, the likes of Sean Dyche, David Wagner, Eddie Howe, and I was really, really hoping that we might get one of them. or even Carlo Ancelotti, which I saw on Sky Bet was only 10-1 to get the job at one stage, even though that just seemed absolutely ludicrous. But in the end, we ended up with David Moyes. The owners were obviously really impressed with the job that he'd done at his last three clubs, where he managed to get Sunderland relegated, win about, I think it was like six games or something, the Real Sociedad, and get sacked from the Man United job 6 months into a six-year contract. So yeah, when I first saw that, I really wasn't like remotely excited. I thought the rest of the season is going to be a write-off. But one thing I will say is I had to argue on the show about half an hour ago that West Ham were going to somehow end up with European football this year under David Moyes. And some of the stuff I said I do agree with to an extent. I mean, I've seen some of David Moyes' interviews that he's done so far, and it does look like that he's upped the training intensity fairly severely, because that was one of Bilic's biggest criticisms, was that his training sessions were pretty useless, to be honest. Apparently players were allowed to turn up when they want, they weren't very intense at all, and this really showed during the games, because we looked sort of not fit at all in any of the games I've watched them this season. So in that sense, I really hope that we're going to improve. He's already come out and said that if players don't work hard in training, they're not going to play. I think he was mainly talking about Marko Arnautović, who just doesn't look particularly interested at all since he's joined us. Basically, it looks like the only reason he's joined us is because we're paying him more. So hopefully we'll see a change in results. I mean, we're 18th at the minute. We've only won two games all season, but the promising thing for us is that we're only 6 points off Brighton and 8th, so the table is so tightly compact that if the players do start playing for Moyes and he does get them firing on all cylinders, he does get them up to the correct fitness levels, then we could maybe climb up the table.
That's an optimistic outlook.
Yeah, I bet you weren't expecting that, were you?
We could maybe. That is absolutely
unbelievable, Jeff! It's amazing!
I'm not going to go to you, Ollie, for this one, because I feel like I get a slightly biased answer. But I'll say, Paddy, do you think West Ham are going to stay up? I mean, surely they've got the squad depth too, and they've got the talent.
I think they've got a chance. They have got some good players in their squad. It is still this, like, Bas and major like departures are, like Payet. It's still a core, which was the team that did push up for Europe, like trying to get Europa League football a few seasons ago. I think they will. It depends how they react to Moyes, as always. But if he can sort of recapture his sort of managerial career by showing that he's put some defensive stability in, gets the wins, he'll definitely be able to keep them up. But I think they might be saved by other teams not performing, because there's teams around them like West Brom who haven't won since August, so they're slowly slipping down the table and looking more and more in trouble as the weeks go by. So they might be saved by the grace of being picking up more points than a team that's slid down.
Yeah, it's been impressive. I mean, Riyad Mahrez still every so often he sort of blips off the radar, but he's by no means finished. And you got to respect that. I mean, you see a lot of players when big clubs come sniffing around, they become children essentially and refuse to do anything, and they refuse to play. And I mean, Ollie, you touched on it earlier with your West Ham striker, you tried to force a move.
Yeah,
at
Diafra Sakho,
absolutely. But Mahrez scoring in the 2-2 draw with Stoke last week. Do you think he's now sort of set in stone at Leicester, James, or is he going to sort of head off in the summer?
Well, I think it seems like he's made a wise move, and in that at Leicester City he's comfortably their best player, whereas if he was to go elsewhere, you know, we've seen it on many occasions, players who've excelled at kind of...
Wilfred
Zaha is probably the best example. Hasn't done particularly well at... do well at Manchester United, but is at home at Crystal Palace and is arguably their best player. Riyad Mahrez knows his place at Leicester City, fits into the style of play brilliantly. He's loved there. And I think it would be foolish for him to leave in the summer. Depends on where Leicester City finish, of course, because another mid-table finish after what they went through last season, players like him, maybe even Jamie Vardy, might feel, you know, if they're going to repeat, that they've tasted success two seasons ago, they want that taste again. But I think Mahrez he seemed a lot more settled at Leicester than he was last summer, and Claude Puel, as Paddy was talking about earlier, seems to have got the best out of him and Damari Gray, and the longer that continues, the the more of a force Leicester will become.
But now we're going to look towards the upper echelons of the Premier League. Manchester City. Oh my goodness, I have not seen a team this good in some time. I mean, at this point, can they be stopped?
I think they'd be very hard-pressed to be stopped. They've got, not only have they got such a good first starting 11, they've got a bench which is stacked of players that could be walking into any other team in the league. I think Pep's methods have clicked under them. They are absolutely harassed teams with their like pressing to get the ball back. It's really like quite incredible to watch the way they the intensity that they play. I think the Premier League, probably as much as it can be in 11 games, is looking like it'll be going back to Manchester.
James, Manchester City, Kevin De Bruyne has been absolutely key this season. Well, I mean, key the last few, but as in, would you? I mean, I heard someone the other day actually class him as the best player in Europe right now. How would you feel about that statement?
I'd completely agree. I was watching the highlights the other day of just Kevin De Bruyne highlights against Stoke City, and some of his passes are just, it's just incredible. The ability that he has on the ball, but also off the ball as well. I think if you watch him, as Paddy was touching upon, the way City press teams, close down space, De Bruyne is always leading the charge. They've just got so many good players, it is ridiculous. Leroy Sané is one of my favourite players to watch. Obviously, in Sergio Aguero, you've got an incredible centre forward still, and Jesus as an option to bring off the bench. They brought him off the bench against Arsenal. You know, that's not a bad substitute to have waiting on the bench. But they're fantastic.
Start with goalkeepers, guys. James, who's the obvious options here? Who's going to make the shortlist?
Well, on the shortlist, you'd have to say Joe Hart, because he's kind of been the regular for England for the last 5-6 years or so. Also in the hat, you'd say Jordan Pickford. I think he's had a really impressive start for Everton this season. Impressed last night against Germany. And Jack Butland also needs to be mentioned. But then you've got the likes of Tom Heaton. I know he's been out injured at the minute for Burnley, but he is a terrific goalkeeper on his day. And also Fraser Forster at Southampton. They're just a few of the options, but for me, I'd probably pick Jack Butland. He hasn't been in brilliant form for Stoke this season, but I think when he has represented his country, he has impressed, and you know, he's at the perfect age now to really excel at a tournament. So he would be my choice for the number one jersey.
So you think Jack Butland should be the starting, not Joe Hart?
Not Joe Hart, no.
It's a fairly interesting decision, that one. I mean,
it's a very interesting decision.
Paddy, what do you think on it?
I'd agree with Jack Butland being the number one. I think Joe Hart has to go in the squad. That sort of his seniority and sort of understanding tournament football might be very useful to the squad. I think his form for the past two seasons, since he got sort of dropped by Man City and shipped off to Torino, I think it's not been good enough for a call-up. I don't really think it should be picked on name. It should be your like form and over the season and whether you really deserve to
whether
play.
You warrant a position.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure. So, quick alert. We've got a very special guest in to join us for a little bit. The URN head of sport, Jeremy Dunn, is here. So, welcome to the studio, Jeremy.
Hello.
And I want to bring you in here. So, goalkeeper, what do you think of the Joe Hart situation?
Literally, when you texted me saying this, I was on my way back from the Hangovers match. I was just discussing this with the head of Impact, actually, Connor Hicks, and we were actually just chatting about trying to work out who we thought we were going to take for this. And, I mean, I straight off, I'm going to say I agree with James. I think side keeper needs to be Butland, in blatant honesty. The question for me is, do you take Hart? I know he's that experienced guy in the dressing room, but I really just do not think that. I mean, it's like, it's Deadwood. I know your third choice keeper, it's very rare you take him, but I'm sorry, Hart, I think, is long gone, not over the hill. I think Pickford has to be the second choice, in my opinion, because he showed last night his distribution is what England have been lacking for a long time. We need that kind of a keeper. And as for the third choice, I don't know. I mean, if he's fit, I'd take Heaton. I reckon Tom Heaton has earned it. He's played very well for them. Although Pope at the moment is doing extremely well for Burnley, it has to be said. Other honourable mentions, I'd say, you know, Ben Foster is always going to be thrown in there. I don't think you take him. I think Fraser Forster is a shout. He's got to have his name considered. if Southampton can up their defensive performances that they've been showing, then he's in. Then he would potentially be in there if Heaton isn't back from his injury by this point. But at the moment, I would say I'm going to go with Button starting, Pickford on the bench, and then Heaton.
Absolutely. Okay, interesting. Ollie, I'm going to cut to you now. I saw you shaking your head quite vigorously there. I mean, what are your thoughts on the situation? Do we take Joe Hart? If we do, does he start?
Well, I'm going to completely disagree with what all of these guys here have said and say that I still think Joe Hart should be our number one. Obviously, a lot of you will probably say I'm biased being a West Ham fan, but I felt this way even last season, to be completely honest with you. I think Joe Hart's been made out to be a scapegoat ever since the Euros. Obviously, he didn't have the best tournament there. Like, he cost us in a couple of games. He made a few mistakes. But as I've said on countless occasions, all goalkeepers do that. I think on his day, he's still our best shot stopper. I think people are forgetting about the fact that he actually got man of the match in England's last qualifier and made a string of fantastic saves. I think people said some ridiculous thing yesterday that Jordan Pickford made more saves for England last night than Joe Hart has done in the last 2 years, which is just, quite frankly, a ridiculous statement considering that was a friendly. Joe Hart's proven that he did it in qualifiers, and as I said, I still think he's England's best shot stopper on his day. One thing I will say is that if he isn't the starting keeper, I don't see any point in taking him at all. I don't think there's any point in taking him as a second, third choice goalkeeper, especially considering his age now. So if he goes, I think he starts. I think he's one of England's best leaders. I think obviously England have lacked these in recent times, and I think you can see the passion that he's got for the team, which a lot of England players lack. In terms of the other two keepers that I take to the World Cup, obviously there's four or five other names to sort of throw into the mix, but I'd probably go with Butland as a second choice, and based on his performance yesterday.
Well, we're going to have to call it there because we are out of time. I've greatly enjoyed this. This has been the Saturday Sports Show, the Premier League show with no Premier League games on at the minute. I hope you guys have enjoyed me with the ring on for 2 hours and us generally having a go at David Moyes. I've been Alex Honnevold. I've been joined by Ollie Roberts, Paddy Summerton, James Aldred, and for a little bit, our head of sport, Jeremy Dunn. We'll be back next Saturday, but for now, enjoy the Black Eyed Peas, I Got a Feeling.
This is URN Sport.